We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. Or visit preborn.com.
American Family Association would like to thank everyone who participated in our Target boycott. AFA declared the boycott when Target announced it would allow men into women's dressing rooms and restrooms. Since the start of the boycott, Target lost over $2 billion in stock value. They've scaled back LGBT Pride Month products and added single-occupancy restrooms. Other corporations also reconsidered their policies in light of the Target boycott. Since it served its purpose, AFA has officially ended our Target boycott.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Well, I love the president. I just want to be clear about that.
I don't care about that.
I know, I love the president.
I love the president.
I think President Trump is a good man. And he's, you know...
That's nice the way he said that, you know? There's something nice about
it. Really is.
It is.
You know, because, I mean, the president has been so unfairly attacked in the media. It's really outrageous. And I've spent a lot of time with the president, and not once have I seen him do something that was mean or cruel or wrong. Not once.
You know, I've known him for 30 years.
Yeah.
And I've never seen anybody take as much as he's taken.
Yeah.
And we've discussed this, and I'm like, how do you deal with it?
Did I have a choice?
So this was part of the interview last night between Trump, Elon, and sitting down with Sean Hannity. And good morning. Today is Wednesday, February 19th. And if you saw this whole interview, which is the focus of the conversation this morning, because I think this is actually the top headline this morning, is this sit-down conversation. If you watched this whole thing, it was incredible. Just the dynamic between Trump and Elon. Even just the framing, I mean, sitting together side by side with Hannity interviewing them, this was the first time that I can remember, and of course, I mean, I go way back with Trump. This is the first time that I can remember Trump sharing the stage with someone and treating them like an equal, like a partner, essentially, rather than a staffer. And it was very obvious that Trump has a lot of respect for Elon. He even said that. He said, I respect him. And the dynamic and the back and forth of talking about what they're doing, I think, is a very new Donald Trump. Because he didn't come across as this defensive, kind of brash, you know, no, let me interrupt. And what he actually let Elon talk, which was shocking for Donald Trump. And he actually listened. And he actually... it seemed very just relaxed and at ease. And of course, you know, this isn't a hostile interview setting, because Sean Hannity is right. I mean, they go back a long time. They are friends. And it almost seemed like Hannity was trying to tell Elon a little bit like, hey, this is my BFF. Like, don't encroach on my friendship with Trump, which was hilarious. But so it's not a hostile setting, but it's also a format here that Donald Trump isn't defensive, like he has been with even other Fox News hosts in the past. He's talking about what they're accomplishing. He seems like he's having a good time and enjoying himself. And he's actually just saying, you know, listen, this is what we're accomplishing. And he doesn't care about the media anymore. In fact, he even said that very clearly. And I think his whole position on a lot of the media and a lot of his desire to just be liked by everyone. We were talking with Steve Dace just yesterday. If you missed the program, listen to that interview with Steve Dace, because we go a little more into this about why Trump just says, you know, it's not even worth it to want to be liked by the New York Times, by by CNN, by all of these people who are going to find a reason to hate him anyway. And he sits down with them, and he still does, and he still answers their questions in press conferences and all that. But it's like he just doesn't care anymore, and it's a great thing. So they have this kind of back and forth, and Hannity is asking Elon a lot about his background and kind of his purpose for being there and all of this. But they also talk about the media strategy. This is cut 8.
Now I see they want you two to start. They want a divorce. They want you two to start hating each other. And they try. Oh, President Elon Musk, for example. You do know that they're doing that to you.
Oh, I see it all the time. They tried it, then they stopped. That wasn't. They have many different things of hatred. Actually, Elon called me. He said, you know, they're trying to drive us apart. I said, absolutely. No, they said, we have breaking news. Donald Trump has ceded control of the presidency to Elon Musk. President Musk will be attending a cabinet meeting tonight at 8 o'clock. And I say, It's just so obvious. They're so bad at it. I used to think they were good at it. They're actually bad at it, because if they were good at it, I'd never be president. Because I think nobody in history has ever gotten more bad publicity than me. I could do the greatest things. I get 98% bad publicity. I could do, outside of you and a few of your very good friends, it's like the craziest thing. But you know what I have learned, Elon? The people are smart. They get it.
Yeah, they do, actually.
They get it. They really see what's happening.
Yes.
And they're continuing to see what's happening. I think he's absolutely spot on that. But this was just such a calm, collected way of thoroughly dismantling the influence and the control of the media. I mean, for a long time in the first term, you know, kept calling them fake news, and he was combative with them, like fighting fire with fire. Now he's just sort of ignoring them and saying, you know, it doesn't even matter anymore. And I think that's actually a even more important position of power over the media, of just completely not caring, because there's a quotation, and I'm not actually sure who it's from. I've seen it a couple different places, but it says, you know, the opposite of love isn't hate. The opposite of love is indifference. And I think here, instead of just hating the media, he is just totally indifferent now. And he's seeing how nothing that he does, none of the accomplishments, none of the work on behalf of the American people, the people get it. And that's what matters. And the average common American voter, you know, you and me, we get it, and we care about America truly being great. We care about the direction of our country. We care about conservative principles, and we are championing what Trump 2.0 is doing, and that ultimately is what matters. And so I think this was just such a turning of a page, in a sense, not to borrow a phrase from Kamala Harris, sorry about that, but but it really was. It was kind of like turning the page into maybe a new framework of how the Trump administration in the second term is not going to be sidelined by all of the negative press. I mean, I can remember working for Trump. I mean, you know, he would call me and would be, you know, really upset about something that, you know, the New York Times wrote about him, and, you know, we'd come up with a strategy to, you know, to handle it and everything. And I would hazard a guess that those phone calls aren't happening nearly as often in Trump 2.0, because he just has a different media strategy and he just doesn't care. And so Elon sitting there, and you know, there's been so much focus on, you know, well, Elon is unelected, and oh, how horrific, and, you know, Elizabeth Warren out there screeching, and Chuck Schumer, and, you know, all the lefties. Well, the administration is elected. Trump is the elected, and everyone who serves in the executive branch in political positions, but we're also seeing even some other positions, but especially political appointees, serve at the pleasure of the president. That's why the executive power per Article 2 is vested in a president of the United States. And then he is the elected. We elected him as a country. And then everyone else who he works with, and he gives and delegates some of that executive authority to under the Constitution, which he is allowed to do with executive agency, they are, in a sense, elected by us because we elected him, and then he makes his choices. So it's a total non-starter. And seeing what Trump is so respectful about with Elon, and how Elon describes his position is really fascinating. He was wearing this t-shirt that says tech support, and that's how he described what he's doing for Donald Trump. And from someone who, as regular listeners know, was really just appalled by the U.S. Department of Education when I contacted them, and they don't even have an email address, and it's, you know, 2025. The federal government absolutely needs tech support, but even more than that, the deep state needs sunshine through the transparency and accountability of all of these audits that Doge is doing. But listen to how Elon describes this. This is cut seven.
You know, I think the way you think of me is like I'm a technologist, and I try to make technologies that improve the world and make life better.
You can show your shirt.
Yeah, and that's why I like my t-shirt says tech support, because I'm here to provide the president with technology support. And now that may seem like, well, is that a silly thing? But actually it's a very important thing, because the president will make these executive orders, which are very sensible and good for the country, but then they don't get implemented, you know? So if you take, for example, all the funding for the migrant hotels, the president issued an executive order. Hey, we need to stop taking taxpayer money and paying for luxury hotels for illegal immigrants, which makes no sense. Like, so obviously, people do not want their tax dollars going to fund high-end hotels for illegals. And yet they were still doing that, even as late as last week. And so, you know, we went in there and we're like, this is in violation of the presidential executive order, it needs to stop. So what we're doing here is one of the biggest functions of the Doge team is just making sure that the presidential executive orders are actually carried out. And this is, I just want to point out, this is a very important thing, because the president is the elected representative of the people. So he's representing the will of the people. And if the bureaucracy is fighting the will of the people, and preventing the president from implementing what the people want, then what we live in is a bureaucracy and not a democracy.
That is so accurate. And that is the, in a word, restoring the will of the people and democracy, or as we would rightly frame it, a constitutional republic with elements of democracy, but rather than a bureaucracy, is the whole point and the focus. And this is why the bureaucracy in the administrative state is after Elon, why they've been after Donald Trump for the last 10 years, but why tech support is so important and returning government to the people and restoring the will of the people. This gets into the whole biblical worldview of why dismantling the administrative state is in fact a good thing, but it is also a biblical principle, because we live in a reality that we have the opportunity for self-governance, and we are called as individuals to understand the will of the Lord and to exercise our God-given freedoms in the best way possible to pursue the Christian life and ultimately to pursue God. And government can either help that and support that as it should if it's operating legitimately, or it can thwart that by infringing upon our God-given rights. So the purpose of government is to preserve and protect those rights. And our founders, of course, understood that in a self-governing society, the best method to achieve the most true liberty, not libertinism, but true liberty for the individual, and to allow and enable us to best be able to realize that liberty and to pursue God and pursue the Christian life, is a government of the people, by the people, for the people. But for the last, you know, 100 plus years even, we've seen the rise of the deep state and the bureaucracy that is out there spending so much taxpayer money on things like that. Doge is showing that we had absolutely no idea specifically about. Like, we knew that, you know, the government isn't actually doing a lot of things on our behalf, and there's tons of taxpayer money, the budget is so overbloated, but we didn't realize how absolutely antithetical to American values and basic principles of good that the administrative state was doing, that this is completely against any sort of legitimacy in government. And so restoring the will of the people is everything that Trump promised in his first term. And I think with the help now of tech support, you need this in this kind of massive morass and maze of all of these expenditures and all of these different ways that the deep state is now being mapped through this technology of Doge. So listen to how Trump and Elon describe restoring the will of the people. This is cut 13.
Look, what all we're really trying to do here is restore the will of the people through the president. And what we're finding is that there's an unelected bureaucracy. Speaking of unelected, there's a vast federal bureaucracy that is implacably opposed to the president and the cabinet. And you look at, say, D.C. voting, it's 92% Kamala. Okay, so we're in 92% Kamala. That's a lot.
They don't like me here either.
I think about that number a lot. I'm like, 92%. That's basically almost everyone.
Yeah.
But if the will of the president is not implemented, and the president is representative of the people, that means the will of the people is not being implemented. And that means we don't live in a democracy, we live in a bureaucracy. And so I think what we're seeing here is the thrashing of the bureaucracy as we try to restore democracy and the will of the people.
So they're trying to restore democracy, the will of the people, and overall, I would add on to that legitimacy in government. And they recognize that as I and others who served Trump in the first term have been saying for a long time, that he was the most underserved president in his first term, because they're right that a lot of what Trump would do in issuing executive orders or tasking individuals or agencies with certain commands from the president, they wouldn't get carried out. It would just be like, okay, well, you know, he issued this, but, you know, I, in my wisdom as a longtime DC 30-year staffer, will just ignore that because that's not working on behalf of what I think is best. And, you know, that question is, well, who elected you? In that sense, when you're going against the will of the elected and when you serve at the pleasure, that's when that question is appropriate. And so tasking Elon and each of these, President Trump mentioned Lee Zeldin, he mentioned HHS Tom Homan and Kristi Noem and some of these others that he has faith and confidence in to actually carry out the America First agenda. These people are actually getting this done. That is 100% different than his first term. But then they also talked about codifying these wins because he recognizes, Trump and Elon both, they recognize that if you don't codify some of these things, then the next administration, if the will of the people isn't to then, you know, elect, it's going to be somebody other than Trump. Like, there has to be a successor. And we should be talking about that now, by the way. Who is going to take the mantle of America First and kind of move this forward? As Vivek Ramaswamy said, who will be kind of Trump 2.0? Now, maybe it'll have to be Trump 3.0 because Trump himself is Trump 2.0. But who will take this into the future? And hopefully it won't be someone who wants to just, you know, reverse all of the good that is being accomplished. And Trump actually thinks that a lot of this is going to be codified and maybe has a little bit more faith in Congress than you or I may have. But here's what they said about having 4 years, and I hope that's true. I hope that conservatives have the majority and the trifecta for all 4 years. Here's what they said about having 4 years to codify. Cut 9.
Do a lot of those executive orders have to be codified into law? You need the Republican Congress to follow
up? Yeah, and they will be. A lot of them will be, yeah.
They will.
But look, in the meantime, we have 4 years. The beauty is we have 4 years. That's why I like doing it right at the beginning, because an executive order is great. I mean, the one problem is both good and bad, because when they did all these executive orders, I've canceled most of them. They were terrible. I mean, we're going to go radical left communist. OK, it was crazy. Their
really crazy.
Executive orders were so bad. If they ever got them codified, you'd never be able to break them. So the damage that Biden has done to this country, and it's not even Biden, it's the people that circled him in the Oval Office, OK? But the damage they did to this country in terms of.
So and he goes on to talk about this and, you know, 4 years to codify and all of the damage that really, and he's right, it wasn't just Biden, it's the left that has done all of this. And that damage, you know, was far before Biden and, you know, maybe when Biden was in the Senate, because he was in Washington for a really long time, but definitely before his administration. I mean, all of this needs to be fixed in law. And really, it kind of, in a sense, already is in terms of the U.S. Constitution, because so much of what the left has done is, in fact, unconstitutional. I mean, the entire bureaucracy and the administrative state and delegating so much authority outside the bounds of legitimate federal action, like when we want to talk about the Department of Education. I mean, education isn't a subject matter given to the federal government, so they can't spend on it. That is just wholly unconstitutional. So even if we don't get a lot of these codified wins, if we simply return to the original intent of the Constitution and the limited powers that are given to the federal government, then we would achieve so much. I mean, 99% of what Trump and Elon want to do. And I hope that that message really gets through to them. And this is why, by the way, I am an advocate of the Convention of States Project, because when you're talking about balancing the budget, when you're talking about term limits to and even for bureaucracy, I mean, this doesn't even have to be on elected officials, but if you have limits to say you can only work in a federal government position for, you know, let's say 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, whatever it is as the fixed term of even non-elected positions, you wouldn't get the rise of the administrative state once again, as much as we have seen. And that's what the Convention of States Project is doing, because we know that Congress, especially looking at the uniparty, with all of this spending that has been on both sides out of control, how Congress is still spending even under a Republican trifecta. You look at, you know, all of the omnibus spending bills and all of this still funding to Ukraine, you know, ridiculous stuff. And you look at where USAID has gone, even to some things that are in Republicans' control. This is a uniparty problem. And so Washington is not going to fix itself. Trump and Elon can do a lot, but this is why the states and the majority of states that have Republican-led legislatures can call for and convene, basically, that's what a convention means, to convene, and they can propose these amendments, bypassing Congress under Article 5, and then ratify term limits and a balanced budget, and even judicial reform. Those are the three big things, and those are the three big things that Trump and Elon are addressing. They can address those things, bypass the entrenched swamp bureaucracy, and then have the states ratify according to the Constitution, just like an amendment that was proposed and passed through Congress. That's the solution, and I would love to see that solution actually happen over the next 4 years. And where we're at in the petition process, I mean, you can go to conventionofstates.com. You can see that. You can see their petition. You can call your representatives if you live in a state that has not yet passed that petition. And if it gets to the two-thirds threshold, then delegates will be sent. We'll convene. We'll talk about those three subject matter, and that's it, because that's what the petition is limited to. But that's what needs to occur next, really. Once we take the executive action, yes, a lot of this needs to be codified by the legislature, but really we need to just bypass the uniparty and the swamp. And I'll just wrap up this segment with Cut 15. This was really interesting of Elon talking about how the two key ingredients for all of this are competence and caring. Listen to this.
I guess at a high level, I think it's what the president mentioned earlier, which is that in order to save taxpayer money, it comes down to two things: competence and caring. And when the president was shown the outrageous bill for the new Air Force One, and then negotiated it down, if the president had not applied competence and caring, the price would have been 50% higher, literally 50% higher. The president cared, the president was competent, the price was not 50% higher as a result. And so when you add more competence and caring, you get a better deal for the American people.
But we could take, we were talking about this yesterday, I could take, give me thousands of bills, any, I could pick any one of
them. Yes, exactly.
But I could take all 1,000. And let's say it's a bill for $5,000, just $5,000, and it's done by some bureaucrat. And if he would say, I'll give you three, I don't want to pay you five, it's too high, I'll give you three. But they don't do that. If a guy sends in a bill for $5,000, they pay $5,000. They expect to be cut. Everybody expects to be cut. When you send in a bill, you expect to be cut. They send in the bill higher for the most part. This is true with lawyers, legal fees. When they send in legal fees, I can cut. I wish I had the time. I would save so. But I could cut these bills
in half, much better than half. But you offer people a much lower number because, you know, they actually put fat. I'm not even saying it's like a way of business. They put more on because they expect to be negotiated. When you send in a bill to the government, there's nobody to negotiate.
Yes.
You send in a bill for $10,000 and they send you a check back for $10,000. If you would call them and said, we'll give you five. No, 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 I need more than five. We'll give you five. I'm not going to pay any more than five. Make it six. No, I'm not going to make it six. And you'll settle for $5,500. You've just cut the bill almost in half. And it took like 2 minutes. But none of that stuff.
Don't we pull out the art of the deal?
But that's caring. No, it's not even the art of the deal. It's caring.
He uses
the word.
And caring.
It's caring. Yeah. It's a certain competence, but I think it's more caring. Than
if you add either ingredient, either competence or caring, you'll get a better outcome. But it stands to reason that if you don't have competence, you don't have caring, you're going to get a terrible deal. And the problem is that the American taxpayers have been getting a terrible deal because look at the last administration. Can any reasonable person say that the last administration was either competent or caring?
No, I don't think we can. And that was exactly what Elon and Trump should have said last night. It was an amazing, amazing interview. I would really encourage you to go and watch the entire thing because the comments and just the worldview and the focus and the strategy that are coming out of Trump and Elon. I'm excited. I think that they are focused on the right things. I think we can build on that. And I think for every American patriot who has been frustrated at our government and wants competence because we care, should be incredibly excited about the next 4 years. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. If we have learned anything from the 2024 election, it's how important it is for us to fight, fight, fight. We also learned how desperately the left wants to fight to take babies' lives, which is why every day Preborn Ministries fights for the babies. Preborn's network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, fighting for mothers deciding between the life and death of their child. Preborn welcomes these women with God's love and offers them a free ultrasound to introduce their precious baby and hear the beautiful heartbeat. This amazing encounter gives her baby a fighting chance, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. So would you join Preborn in the fight for life? One ultrasound is just $28, and $140 will sponsor five ultrasounds. Babies are worth fighting for. To donate, dial #250 on your cell phone and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or you can visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible and Preborn has a 4-star charity rating. Fight, fight, fight for the babies.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. So in addition to having that dynamic focus and that competent and caring strategy that is focused on ridding the deep state of the bloated bureaucracy and actually having American government working on behalf of the American people, Trump is also very deftly handling a lot of the chaos that is going on overseas and handling with his campaign promises, a lot of stuff not only in the Middle East, but also with the Ukraine and Russia war. So top officials from Russia and the U.S. agreed Tuesday to put together quote unquote high level teams in order to bring an end to the ongoing war in Ukraine. And, you know, this is just something where Trump is firing on all cylinders here. And I was saying to one of my producers in the break, I mean, I think that part of the reason that he is so relaxed and just doesn't even care about media anymore is because he doesn't have another election. And so he just doesn't care about his approval rating. He doesn't care. The guy was literally almost assassinated several times. He's going to have a different perspective. And a lot of people were saying that, you know, Trump only having 4 more years instead of another election would make him lame duck on day one. And he has taken that whole concept of lame duck and has turned it into flaming duck, because this guy is just barreling down the agenda. And we are less than a month in to his presidency. It'll be a month tomorrow. And he's getting everything done. And so the officials that met for the Russia and U.S. Agreement, the officials that met include Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, Marco Rubio, of course, our U.S. Secretary of State, National Security Advisor Mike Waltz and Steve Witkoff, and President Trump's Middle East envoy. So Rubio said that both embassies in Moscow and Washington would have to be restaffed as, quote, we're going to need to have vibrant diplomatic missions that are able to function normally in order to be able to continue these conduits. Rubio also said this as far as President Trump actually achieving his campaign promises. Cut 17.
No one else has been able to bring something together like what we saw today, because Donald Trump is the only leader in the world that can. So no one is being sidelined here. But President Trump is in a position that he campaigned on to initiate a process that could bring about an end to this conflict.
All right, well, let's welcome in Matthew Tierman, who is a journalist and a political strategist. And Matt, so what do we expect ongoing with these negotiations? Because Zelensky basically feels very sidelined, but he can't really do anything about it at this point, can he?
No, he's between a rock and a hard place, as Ukrainian geography has left Ukraine and Central Europe for many, many centuries. But the American perspective that is being envisioned and executed by Trump is that we're into this for almost $250 billion, and we've gotten nothing but graft from the military-industrial complex, graft from the Ukrainian military and oligarchy. And so if we're going to stabilize the region and we're going to be proactive in that, we're going to invest more of our capacity in doing so, we're going to get something for it. And I actually think it's tactically and strategically brilliant that he's saying, well, let's do a trade deal around rare earth minerals, which you guys have plenty of, which, by the way, are going to be stuck in the ground and not create any economic development at all for your country. No job creation, no nothing. Unless we do this, those who partner with large cap American industry, especially energy extraction, generally see an embedded and implicit security guarantee even without troops on the ground. America protects its interests, just as we do with the shipping lanes to, you know, talk to the Somali pirates. So I actually think it's very, very good, and it is a very good way of crafting an independence for Ukraine from the Russian autocratic sphere, because economic growth breeds that. So I actually think this is very, very strong. And of course, you have, you know, the globalist left and European hawks who have not invested any of their own capital, you know, crying foul on this and saying, no, we need American troops. Well, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, and the United States has been very clear, and President Trump as well, that Europe isn't helping handle this at all, and so basically they just don't get a seat at the table, which I think is fair.
Yeah, look, if Europe is going to actually meet its commitment on NATO defense spending, it's a collective defense budget, and they are vastly in arrears on it. You know, only 8 countries total, including the U.S., out of 28 or so, pay in the required previously 2% of GDP, moving up. There's a few countries who do pay their fair share and then some, and those are countries that, like Poland, who feel the crunch of being on NATO's peripheral border. They know that it's existential for them, but the largest economies like Germany and France are free riding on it, and they want to continue to do so. And that's not going to fly under President Trump, which is a very, very good thing. He actually is caring about American taxpayers who have footed the bill for everything.
Yeah, and I think that Rubio is in lockstep with this, because, I mean, it was only, I think it was maybe April of last year that Rubio said he was voting no on the Ukraine funding bill. And it was only he and Rick Scott that voted no. And Rubio specifically said it was because the bill didn't deal with immigration, other issues, you know, on the home front. But he has not been one of the GOP that, you know, was wearing the Ukraine flag and basically just giving Ukraine whatever they want. So he seems to be very much in line with Trump's vision for how these negotiations will go.
Rubio is very, very realpolitik. He understands. He's been, you know, on the Senate Foreign Relations and Armed Services Committees for many, many years. He's generally a hawk. He understands the threat of global communism as a Cuban from Miami who has been involved with the dissident circles. He understands the growth of communism in Latin America, and he doesn't look at Russia with rose-colored glasses, you know, the way Steve Bannon does, talking to Alexander Dugin, Putin's advisor, all the time. Russia is not our friend. They're an adversary. That being said, it does not help us to inflame tensions and freeze economic trade in that part of the world because nobody benefits. So the realpolitik is, okay, trust but verify, like Reagan said. We don't have the luxury of having these purity tests. Oh, they don't agree with us on diplomatic policy or geopolitics. Yes, they may be a threat, but so we have to keep them in abeyance forever at, you know, unlimited cost. Rubio's got a very pragmatic view about this, and I don't know who it was in the Trump admin that constructed this framework for we will invest in energy extraction and natural resource industry in Ukraine. That will create jobs. That will create stability, and that will also create an embedded security guarantee because we have deep economic interests there. This is the right way to thread this needle. Russia will not be happy about this. It weakens their energy industry if we have competing faction right across their border selling to the West these very, very necessary inputs to all of 21st century global industry. So, you know, Rubio is doing the right thing. You know, he is hawkish enough in philosophy, but recognizes as America's chief diplomat that that's not going to work, that that's just going to be more of the same. We could keep throwing money at the problem, but much like, you know, unlimited aid in Africa, it doesn't change the poverty rates. It, you know, it's continuing to do the same thing, expecting a different result, is the definition of insanity. And you said in the in your opening on this segment that, you know, Trump is acting very, very not lame duck. And I incorrectly thought that he might be because he knows now that it doesn't matter. He's going to do what he wants. He understands the power structures. And if, you know, the Hudson Institute and the other think tanks that, you know, function under a global framework of harmonized philosophy don't like it, well, too bad. We have a compelling self-interest to seal this whole dispute up and move forward. And by linking this to trade and heavy industry with American investment, that's the best way to do it. That is the best way to create stability, economic growth, and keep Russia not getting stronger at the expense of the American taxpayer.
Yes, so well said. My special guest, Matt Tiermand. You can follow him at Matthew Tiermand on X, journalist and political strategist. And yeah, it's a whole new world of no lame ducks. And I think that Trump is taking this next 4 years not having another election and approaching it completely different than the politicians and the typical establishment, which is, you know, very Trumpian. But in just the last few minutes I have with you, Matt, do we expect that these two, you know, cadres between the U.S. and Russia will actually get a sit down between Trump and Putin? I mean, that's what's being reported as kind of the next step.
I think absolutely. I think that that optic needs to happen for Trump to fulfill his, you know, self-made prophecy over the last 2 to 3 years as he was campaigning for this second non-consecutive term, which is I will seal this crisis. I will open up ties again. I will defuse and de-escalate the situation. So I do think that needs to happen. And, you know, I've been very pro-Ukraine. I live part-time in Poland, and I understand what this invasion, how it was precipitated, and the suffering that, you know, at whose hands it occurred. And that's Russia. But that doesn't mean we have to continue throwing American taxpayer money at it where it just gets grafted and grifted by our oligarchs and their oligarchs. That's not going to stabilize anything. The American taxpayer loses again. The globe is further destabilized. So Trump will get that optic. He will have that sit down. And, you know, it will be a summit that will probably be spun as this, you know, grand rapprochement. It won't be that, but it will be effective in ameliorating this 3 years of nonsense conflagration that was totally precipitated by the Biden administration by design.
Yeah, well, and Matt, you know, as Trump himself said, you know, he didn't care anymore what the legacy media says, so they can spin it all the ways that they want. But thankfully, there are other news outlets like American Family Radio, by the way, that, you know, you can listen instead of some of those legacy media that are just trying to spin everything. We'll tell the truth. We'll have biblical perspective and conservative perspective here. So thanks so much, Matt. We'll be right back with more.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And even more of Trump's deputies and secretaries are just firing on all cylinders to advance the America First agenda. And this includes Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as he restores the mission of health to HHS. So this coming from Town Hall, newly minted Secretary RFK Jr. took to the microphone at the Department of Health and Human Services Tuesday morning. Ahead of his first full day at the agency, he spoke to thousands of government employees, many in person, about his mission under the direction of President Donald Trump. Quote, "My mission at HHS, and I hope you will all join me, is to reverse the chronic disease epidemic in America," Kennedy said. "We're going to work together to launch a new era of radical transparency. Only with radical transparency can we provide Americans with true informed consent." That being a key word that, of course, we did not have during the COVID era, where informed consent and an actual willingness to participate was not part of the whole Biden vaccine mandate. And states as well are looking at health and human services on the state level. And so this headline coming from Louisiana, Louisiana ends mass vaccination as Trump pulls funds for schools with COVID shot mandates. So on February 13th, Louisiana Surgeon General Ralph Abraham released a memo announcing that the Louisiana Department of Health, quote, will no longer promote mass vaccination. In a separate letter published on the department's website, Abraham explained why his office would no longer be promoting vaccine propaganda and how he intends to rebuild trust. That coming from the We the Patriots USA Substack. So let's welcome in Brian Festa, who is a co-founder and VP of We the Patriots USA. And Brian, I know that this whole topic is very near and dear to your heart and part of the mission of We the Patriots. So where are we at in this whole Make America Healthy Again?
Yeah, good morning, Jenna. Where we are is exactly where I predicted we would be. You're having the red states fall in line, and you're having the so-called blue states, states like, California and Connecticut, my former home state, really pushing back against this. I saw an example just last night, a Connecticut State Senator, Saud Anwar. He's a physician, and he was reposting a Bloomberg article about how states across the country are decreasing or pulling back on water fluoridation because Kennedy has Secretary, now Health and Human Services Secretary Bobby Kennedy, has indicated that fluoridation is not healthy. We've been lied to for decades, and states are already changing their regulations, but with one exception, they quote the bill proposed by Senator Anwar in Connecticut, who is the first, I expect, of several states to propose a bill to protect water fluoridation in the state of Connecticut. And states like California and New York, I expect, will propose similar legislation because they are pushing back against what's happening at the federal level. And, I've been talking about this for a couple of months now, and people have asked me, you know, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think, you know, all of these states are just going to embrace this new HHS, this new CDC and FDA? And I said, absolutely not. I said, in the blue states, no longer are the federal agencies going to be the so-called trusted experts anymore. You're now going to have state-level experts. The state legislators, the state public health agencies are now going to be looked at as the only trusted experts in places like California, New York, Connecticut, and so on.
Yeah, and I think that's a very apt observation, Brian Festa, that, you know, when Democrats are in control, then federal government agencies are the gold standard and states have to go along with that. And, you know, of course, when there is a leftist wing in control of the Supreme Court, then they're super precedent, all of this. But as soon as Republicans or conservatives have the majority, then suddenly states are saying, no, the federal government doesn't matter. So it's always just Democrats do whatever they want to get to their preferred outcome instead of recognizing where and when the Constitution actually provides supremacy for the federal government versus when states can make their own decisions and lead the way. So where are we at with any of the legal disputes here? What do you anticipate potentially with this clash between Kennedy's HHS versus some of the blue states?
Well, you know, first of all, just hats off to Ralph Abraham in Louisiana and other, you know, great surgeon generals across the country, like Joseph Latipo that we've seen in the past as well, who have recognized that this isn't about politics. It should be about actual science and actual public health. But yeah, in states like California, for instance, Attorney General Robert Bonta has already been pushing back very heavily against the Trump agenda with regard to things like, you know, illegal immigration and also the transgender executive orders that he's passed. And he's made it very clear that he's going to fight that. He was one of 22, I think, attorneys general that joined litigation to block Trump's executive order on birthright citizenship. So I think the same thing is going to happen in the public health sector. You're going to have, whether it's by executive order or just by orders coming from HHS, changing guidelines with regard to things like vaccination. I think you're going to see massive pushback in those states. They're not going to accept it. And if their federal funding is threatened, as it was with this most recent EO from President Trump on, I think it was last Friday, regarding the COVID mandates, they're going to fight back in court and say that he doesn't have the right to restrict funding, that that's their argument, I suspect, will be that that's Congress's jurisdiction with their taxing and spending power, even though the president as the executive does have discretion over funds that have already been allocated by Congress. He does have discretion over how agencies allocate that funding, because the agencies are ultimately fall under his authority as the chief executive. So, but there is going to be a legal battle, and I suspect that will be their argument, is that just like it's their argument with other EOs that he's issued with regard to immigration, transgender issues, things like that, is that it's not within his power to do this. It has to be an act of Congress. But, you know, I don't think most of those challenges are going to be successful, actually. I think in the vast majority of the cases, especially with regard to this latest one regarding COVID mandates, I think that one will withstand scrutiny. And I don't think actually there's going to be a ton of pushback on that particular one, only because most schools have already dropped their COVID shot mandates. And there's no K through 12 school in the country that even requires it, at least not public schools, because there's no state in the nation that requires a COVID shot to attend public school.
I'm sitting with Brian Festa, who is the VP and co-founder of We the Patriots USA. You can find him on social media and We the Patriots, and also go to wethepatriotsusa.com. Because, you know, I see this, Brian, as a kind of multifaceted push that we need red states to implement good legislation on this. We need litigation and challenges from HHS to the blue states in obviously constitutionally appropriate ways, but then also maybe other states' attorneys general. But what about, you know, the NGOs or some other organizations that can help facilitate both at least helping with getting bills passed and maybe model legislation or litigation and challenges like what your organization, We the Patriots, do? Where should we be looking for these types of opportunities?
Well, absolutely. It's going to come down to the states, Jenna. It always comes down to the states. It always comes down to local communities have to fight back. The federal government is not our savior. It never has been, and it still isn't, no matter who we have in charge, no matter how great the things coming out of the White House are at this time. We have to realize that ultimately it's up to us to fight back on the local level. So, yes, I think, meeting with your, you know, state legislators trying to get good bills passed, that's something that the NGOs can do. And then for our part, because we focus on litigation, absolutely, when we see an abuse of power, when we see something that's a constitutional violation, we intend to file lawsuits. We intend to continue filing lawsuits. For instance, in Hawaii, just about a week and a half ago, a bill passed out of the Public Health Committee which would repeal the religious exemption to mandatory school vaccinations. So, you know, as you know, We saw this during COVID. There are people that have legitimate religious objections to using certain vaccinations, many of which, most of which, were produced using aborted fetal tissue, for instance. So faithful Christians who don't believe in abortion obviously have a strong religious objection to that. What this bill does is it repeals the ability for any parent to opt out of vaccinations for school attendance. So we are fighting that. We're already gathering plaintiffs. We've already announced we'll be immediately filing a federal lawsuit against this bill if it is passed.
Great. Well, people can support your work in all of this important litigation. I know there's so much more, Brian Festus. We'll have to have you back on soon to discuss even further. But go to We the Patriots USA to support Brian Festus' work there. And as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.